Welcome to the B-side. It is Monday, November the 10th, 2014. I'm Tyler Crawford, joined as always by lead pastor here at church, Steve Croker.
Hey.
Hey.
How's it going? Yeah.
It's going good. Well, we've been talking all afternoon, but...
good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you. Like,
you just get here?
Yeah. Well, I do roll into work very often at 1:30, but generally... That's because I have YouTube that night, but that's neither here nor there. We're not here to talk about my hours.
People in podcast line don't know what time it is.
It's true. It is, whatever time, yes. Not a live podcast.
They're not even listening today.
No, that's a good point. Got a very good compliment from a listener that was like, told me this week how great the podcast was and how they...
The listener?
The listener that I talked to that happened to be my wife,
oh.
Who's on mat leave, so she's got a little more time, was like, this thing is amazing. You have, like, you guys talk about the sermon? Like, that's awesome. I was like, well, I am on it, so...
You're a little biased.
Yeah, I'm a little biased, but it's... if, as always, we'll start it off by saying this week, if you have questions related to the sermon or... just faith in general, that you're, how do we think with a Christian worldview about ... send them to the B-side at tawassalines.org. We'd love to have them. We got some questions for today, but we love kind of tackling questions as best we can and try to, we're not always necessarily gonna have, all the answers, but we'll try to find them.
And, but we'll talk about them.
But we will talk about it, even if we don't know what we're talking about. But Steve, this Sunday you tackled mercy. We're kind of winding down our drift series, yep. Right? So we were mission last week, mercy this Sunday, prayer this coming Sunday, and then there's one more.
Perseverance.
Finishing. So we're finishing well. With the drift series, by talking about perseverance.
It's like there was a plan.
But for those who maybe missed Sunday or haven't watched it online yet, you should. Can you give us your sermon in a sentence kind of spiel for what we heard?
So, parable of the Good Samaritan, and connected to the drift series, the idea was we know we're called to love people, and yet I think what we tend to do is drift from a position of actually desiring to show mercy, view our resources as opportunities to serve and love others. We drift from that into a place where we're pretty protective of our things and begin to view them as things we need to protect and hold tightly. So a way we drift is in our view of those in need. Do we view them as opportunities to love God by loving others, or do we view them as people that are in our way?
Right, almost, and I would say closely linked to mission in that idea, like in the sense of like, how do we see others
our neighbors, our community? Yeah.
And I think you kind of touched on a similar theme that I touched on the week before when we talked about mission, is that depending on how you see yourself, and you could be a bit more explicit with it because of the story that you preach from, but the idea of who do you identify with in the story? Hmm. And so, and I thought you nailed it on the head as far as my thoughts are concerned, is that we so often identify with the Samaritan, the man who is the hero of the story, kind of, who sees someone who's different and steps over social boundaries, and so we see ourselves in that context of, oh yeah, that's me when I help the homeless person or the drug addict or that's what I'm supposed to do, as opposed to seeing ourselves, as you would have rightly pointed out contextually, that the hearers of the word would have seen themselves and identified very much more with the Jewish man who was beaten.
And when I came to realize that part of the story, I came to see it that way, it really does change the way you read it. Now, it still is a moral tale, because the Jewish lawyer is asking, who do I have to love? Who do I not have to love? And so that it's a lesson for him in rightly applying the law. But I mean, one of the people in our community group, we were discussing it yesterday, in our community group, said that she found the story, prior to thinking about it this way, she found the story exhausting, I think was her word, in that it just it tells you, love people like this. This is how what you have to do. Love people like the Good Samaritan. And when you actually really
pour
think
yourself
about
out
that,
for them.
Yeah, you're just anyone you come across in need, pour yourself out sacrificially in love for everyone. And no matter how much you do that, there's always more people to love. There's always more needs. You can never do enough. And when you actually try to think that way, live that way, it's go, oh my goodness, I can't do this. Like, it's exhausting when you're looking at the amount of need and there's this moral demand on you to love everyone like that. And you go, oh, I can't do that. Like, it's just, and I think some people have grown up in churches where they are a little bit more do, religion, legalistic, and less gospel-centric. And so there's always just a weight, putting weights on people, a burden of what you have to do, and just being overwhelmed all the time by the great requirements, the great the call of Jesus, like in this passage. And that call's still there, but what we have to do is first see ourselves as the victim, first see ourselves as the recipients of God's mercy. And we read the story and go, I don't love people like that. I know I should. I wish I could, but I fail many times, and there's mercy for that. Drives us to our knees, right?
So, right, and I feel like, just like with mission, it's when we kind of understand our lot and what we've been spared from, mm-hmm. there's a compulsion to kind of respond accordingly out of the gratitude out of our heart, as opposed to the duty with which we feel like we should to identify ourselves. And that's the whole split between legalism and non-legalistic living, is that we think we ought to be something because that's the expectation people have put onto us. But it's like, I remember this illustration I heard and actually used in a sermon here, and kind of claimed as my own, but this idea of, like, if you think about it in the context of your spouse, and I think that, I don't know if you were here that week, it was in the summer, but the illustration was very much that there are a lot of reasons I don't cheat on my wife. It would cost me financially, it would destroy my family, it would do all these negatively impacting things on both my life and her life and my job and all these other things.
Yeah, unfair.
Yeah, clearly. But the fact that you would fire me from my job isn't what compels me to not cheat on my wife. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately. Well, fortunately, it's for her. It's my love for her. Like, I am compelled to love her, and it would destroy her. Mm-hmm. So that is compulsion. There's all these other things that I recognize, and I can see them clear as day. But my motivation, what drives me to honor and love my wife, is my love for her,
not fear of consequences.
Yes, and that's kind of, that was a light switch moment for me with that, and I started seeing it apply in all these different areas. It's how we think about mercy and prayer.
I think the key is, like, we live out of our position or from our position in Christ that's come by grace, not living to gain that position. So we live as adopted, loved, forgiven sons and daughters of the Father.
Yeah.
And because we are loved, we love others. Not, which is the gospel, not religion, which says, if you love others enough, if you do these 12 things, if you do these things and keep these rules, then you will become sons and daughters if you do enough. Right?
Yeah.
Which is just the overwhelming and crushing burden of religion, which you never can do enough. And even many Christians who would affirm the gospel practically, the sermons they preach, the way they read the Bible, the way they live their lives, is in that sort of religious, do enough and God will accept you.
Yeah.
And now it may end up being the same thing, love your neighbor. But the one person loves their neighbor hoping that God will love them, and the other person loves their neighbor because they've experienced the love of the Father already. So living out of your position, not living for a position. And I think that switch can be subtle, but is everything.
Oh, and I mean, think about it.
Everything.
If you just transfer that context to your marriage, as again another parallel, but you go, do you do nice things for your wife
in order to
earn her love, or do you do it because she loves you and you love her, And mm-hmm. so you bring her flowers, you send her on a trip, whatever it is, that you're not doing it so that, like, Melissa's away in Mexico right now with a friend, and like, it's a generous gesture for you, and but you're not doing it to earn points. She's been incredibly generous to you and both, and obviously, so it's more of like a...
When you're not scorekeeping.
Yeah, that's
in fact, actually, in marriage, when you get to that point of scorekeeping, mm-hmm. you're actually, that's in yeah. like pastoral counseling, when we're meeting with, praying with people, when you get to that, she did this, I did that, scorekeeping, you did that, so I get to do it. It's just yeah. It's a destructive relationship
yeah.
versus like covenant love-based relationship. There's give and take, there's compromise, but no one's keeping track of,
yeah.
there's no record of wrongs.
You know? Right.
So, I mean, that's a real...
And
sounds good.
And the point is, all of it is rooted in it's our... Often our love is responsive as opposed to initiative taking, and that like how we love others is often a representation of how we've been loved and yeah. how we've received love. And that's how it works in a marriage, in the sense of like, you know, when you love your spouse, when you love one another, mm-hmm. it's rooted, it's not in like, I'm going to love you. Mm-hmm. So it's, I love you because you love me. And, like, we're in this mm-hmm. together, right?
Which is why all of Paul's letters, when you read them in their context, they all start with, this is what God has done for you. This is the gospel.
Yeah.
And at the end, he gets to exhortation. Therefore, in light of who you are in Christ, in light of all that God has done yeah. for you, therefore, let's live worthy of that. Let's live in a certain way. It's not, do this, and someday you'll be that. It's, yeah. this is who you are by grace. Therefore, let's live like it's true. Live out of that reality. It always is gospel and then exhortation after.
So the question that comes to mind, and I think was asked with respect to Sunday's message, and when we think about mercy and when we think about our compulsion to allow the love that God has shown, love and grace that God has shown us to kind of flow into the world we live in and the relationships that we have, are we as Christians, are we called, would you say, according to the text and according to what Jesus is trying to point us to, toward fulfilling every need we see, or are there healthy boundaries that we should mm-hmm. establish in our lives to say, okay, here's some of the ways we're going to be looking to fill needs, and here's some things that we're not going to go there because it's mm-hmm. it's unwise, it's foolish, it's dangerous, etc.
I think I don't want to say the weakness of the story, but the limitation of the story is, the story is very simple. To me, it's a short parable. Life, the needs that we face are a lot more complex, right? In that case, the man is half dead. He needs medical attention. The Samaritan is able to provide medical attention. It's very simple and clear. His needs are met. It's a lot more complex if you're facing someone who's struggling with homelessness and addiction. It's a little less clear what the needs are and whether you can meet them or not, right? So we're at war. The need you come across is, you hear about Christians being persecuted in Iraq. Okay, there's a need, but how are you going to meet it? And what is the real need? And can you meet it? You know, like, these situations are more complex than in the simple parable. And so it requires great discernment. I think there's two ends of the spectrum, or like mistakes, extremes, right?
Yeah.
The one is the lawyer who's like, okay, so I can't love everyone. So who, clearly I can't love everyone. Who are the people I don't have to love? And you're looking for ways out, right? And so it's a, I'm going to love some people, but others I'm not. And that's what the story is there, to sort of reprimand this guy who's got this view of sort of limiting who God calls him to love. So, if that's our, you know, you want to avoid that extreme. On the other side of it is perhaps the mistake that love always means being walked on. You know, where there's no healthy boundaries, you're a doormat, and you're defining love maybe as just all your resources are available to be plundered.
Not everyone's.
And there's no boundaries, there's no wisdom really in it.
We're not all called to be Hosea.
So like you walk down, you give everyone whatever they ask.
Yeah,
that's not, I think, wise either. So, and in reality, probably what God is calling us to is something in the middle, where we are being a good neighbor, we're open willing to use all of our time and resources to love the people that God brings upon our life, but we're also using discernment and wisdom. I think one of the questions we have to ask, and I've learned a lot about this from Paul Papworth, who I think should be here. I mean, really afterwards, I went, Paul should have preached this message, because he's the one that's teaching me about how you love others wisely and generously, you know? But what this person's asking for, is that what they need? And differentiating what someone wants and what someone needs. Mm-hmm. So someone on the street may want money, but is that what is helpful for them? Is that what they need? Is it truly loving to give someone something that they want but would actually be damaging? You know what I mean?
Well, so that's
called
and that's
to love
argument,
and show mercy,
right?
But not called to help cycles of poverty and abuse. Well, or someone with a codependent relationship that you come, that just wants to come and always be present in your life and taking you away from the responsibilities that God has given you to your family or whatever, right? These things are complex, but love doesn't mean giving everyone everything that they want.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Doesn't mean, yeah, it doesn't, sometimes through acts of love, people get angry at you, right? Like when you're, mm-hmm. you know, you think about disciplining your children, for example, like you're disciplining the ones you love because it's good for them. Mm-hmm. They're probably not super stoked that dad's giving them spanking or sending them to the room or whatever. I don't know if you spank or not, so I'm not insinuating anything, but you should because it's better. I'm just kidding. You're looking at me like you're an idiot, and I am. It's all right.
I have no comment because I'm in the process of adoption.
That's a good point.
Where you're strictly forbidden.
Really? Interesting.
Ever spank your children.
Interesting. Back to the point at hand. Sorry, I didn't mean to take us on
rabbit that. Trail.
Yeah, that's my nickname. Not really. Please, nobody call me
Pastor
that.
Pastor
Rabbit Trail.
You listen to the B-side. Call Tyler Pastor Rabbit Trail on Sunday.
I think sometimes we, and that it's true for most areas in the Christian life, is that we want to pick a side, and often it's, we want to say black, we want to say white, but it's often the gray that we kind of are called to live and navigate in. And so like I think, and I use this example with our young adults on Sunday, was I think of like, there's, I was kind of trained to ignore the problem. Like think about street people, right. For example, and I think it was more just because it was easier as a child to explain to me that, no, those, if we give them, we would like to give them money. If we do, they'll use it for drugs. And then later on, I heard the argument, well, who are we to control? We're just called to be generous. Who are we called? We're not going to be held accountable. God's not going to judge us for giving money away. For how someone else spends it, right? Like if you need $20 and you come to me and I'm generous and I give you $20, God's not going to judge me based on how you spend that money, is he? Unless I know better.
Good point. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
unless,
I mean,
yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like one of the things I've actually found is it's much harder. It's much more life invading.
Yeah.
Is trying to discern when a need arises, mm-hmm. what is the need? Mm-hmm. So if a person in downtown Vancouver comes asking for money, and they, you know, we've all probably been subject to like, I need bus fare, I need X amount of dollars to get, I need to go here, and da da da. Mm-hmm. Could we discern the need and actually maybe buy them a bus ticket or buy them a meal? And it's harder and it's messier because often we're spending more time when we're mm-hmm. generally when we're being, but that's kind of a. I think that's the point, is that like when we're meeting a need, we're actually not just giving of our resources, but we're giving of ourselves.
The cost is higher.
Yes.
Not just money, but and that's what we noticed and talked about in the story, is the man didn't throw the guy money, but he gave him of himself. He gave his time.
And it still cost him money.
Yeah. He used his resources, which maybe, you know, he's wrapping him in clothes or bandages that are spoiled with blood now, and he doesn't do it for fame or credit. The man's unconscious. When he wakes up, he's not even there trying to get his thank yous or payback. Like, he's gone. He doesn't do it for fame, credit, honor. Doesn't, you know, he just does it because he's there and he's merciful.
Well, and part of the thing that really stuck out to me was like, our general, for most of us, our inability to receive mercy without wanting to repay it.
Yeah.
So, like, I use this example all the time of, like, when I was in college, my car breaking down, my engine seizing and being 400 kilometers from home, and a family stopping to help me and offering to take me to Vailmont on their way to Kamloops, where I was at Jasper, and I kept catch the bus, and I was like, okay. And then about 30 seconds into the car ride, the guy just says, you know what, we'll take the 4-hour detour, we'll drive you home, it's Christmas, whatever. And it was like, there was nothing I could, no amount of, like, here's some keg gift cards for, like, taking, or whatever, like, for essentially taking 8 hours of your family's holiday time and taking a literal stranger, a guy you picked up on the side of the road, home. And I don't know their names. I don't know where they're from. I don't know where, like, all I remember is they were going to Kamloops and they had a blue Dodge Ram. And they gave me a ride home and it was, like, a godsend. And until you can, like, I feel like, our compulsion is to always want to even the score. So yeah. We go for lunch. You buy me lunch. Next time, I'm going to be like, "Oh, it's my turn." Because we're keeping
score.
Don't want
to be your dad.
Yeah,
it's a pride issue.
Yeah,
the pride issue. Yeah.
Okay, so take it a step further. What do we do then? How do we handle some of these things? Because one of the things that I've noticed trending in our culture is kind of self-gratifying ways of helping. And one of those is through raising awareness. Now, of course, there are things that need to be brought into public light that are not getting the limelight they maybe need. But one of the crazy, through social media that I've seen grow exponentially in the last 10 years has been this raising awareness for XYZ. And it's grow a mustache, wear a ribbon, put your pants on backwards, like whatever the trend is.
Dump ice water on your head.
We both tried to avoid.
Change your Twitter profile.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, when it's, like, I think back to, like, Kony 2012. Put posters everywhere in White Rock and Tawasin of Kony 2012 so that they'll be, and this guy in Africa will free people. Like, I'm going, how does this help? So how do we as Christians kind of navigate this? Like, you see something on Facebook every day, ISIS, or this Hillary girl who chose to end her own life. There's a great blog on that in the gospel. But how do we actually stand in the gap and from a political standpoint, express what we believe God's best design for our people are, in the sense of the political realm and the awareness realm? Because I feel like a lot of the awareness stuff is just gratifying, a sense of, like, I'm doing something. I clicked, I shared, I liked it.
Yeah. There's like a lot of those, there's a term for it, which is really funny, playing on words. I can't remember what it was, where it's like the charity that costs you nothing. It's just sort of social media charity.
Right.
I forget, there's a funny term. It's all good. What they call it. Anyway, because it costs you nothing. And it makes you look good.
Yeah.
If I'm just posting something, I'm not saying that posting anything or making awareness, but there's a certain type where it's like people are see, that's the thing about the story, is we know it's love and mercy because it costs him.
Yeah.
So what love does, it costs us something. Versus if I'm just sharing thoughts and prayers for this person or this situation, it costs me nothing and I gain. Like, sometimes if your motive is just to look good, it costs me nothing and it gains me credit. The Good Samaritan, it costs him quite a bit and it gains him nothing. Nobody knows he did it. There's no audience watching. He doesn't get thanked. He doesn't get repaid. There's no kickback for him. He just shows compassion.
Mm.
Versus the trend, like the social media thing, is it costs me basically nothing and it makes me look good. And so that's the exact opposite of this sort of picture of the Good Samaritan's compassion, right? I mean, the question maybe is, are we responsible do we hold a responsibility to love our neighbors in these situations? Is that sort of the question? Like, so in Iraq or other parts of, I mean, one of the challenges is that because of the internet, we're aware of all sorts of things that, like, for the Good Samaritan, I mean, it's just a story, but in the first century, without any technology like that, you know, you find out about a need because he stumbled across this man.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, hearing a telethon on TV, raising awareness for something or a need here, a need that we're aware of. It's an amazing and very strange different time that we live in, where we're very much aware of what's going on in Iraq or West Africa or Cuba or wherever. We hear reports from Christians or others what happened today, and because of communication. And so we're aware of needs that we can't actually meet. So we're getting bombarded with needs in some ways. And are we responsible in some way? I think this is where we pray and discern, because I think we look at who has God put in my life, in my path, to kind of use the parable, right? He came across this this need. So who has God put in my path and has given me the resources to meet their need, right? You have a man in his way who has an incredible need, and there's no one else to meet it, and he happened to have what was needed with him.
Yeah.
Namely, an animal, the bandages, the oil, whatever. Whatever was needed, he had. So you're looking at what you have and looking at the needs that God has placed in your way. And I think I found that just like God, I think, makes it clear to you. If you're prayerful and attentive, and if you're thinking this way, like desiring to love like this, needs will come across and God will give you the compassion to meet them. And I think he makes it clear. Mm-hmm. If we're prayerful and if we're attentive, yeah. I can't meet every need by any means. But God will bring people in my way, along my path, and I'll just feel strongly that this is something we need to do.
And I think part of it is when we think of it in the same light of that we would think about giving, that Jesus talked about, like, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing when you give. Mm-hmm. Much could be attributed here in the sense of, like, who is this for? That's the core, like, in the sense of going, like, if I'm going to share something on Facebook or Twitter or whatever about an issue, who is it for? Am I sharing because I want notoriety, or am I sharing because I want to bring attention to something that really matters to me and I think it's going to benefit, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think it's trying to strike that balance of going, who's this serving? Is this actually serving the needs of the people that need their needs met, or is this serving my desire for ego or to be seen as a compassionate, generous person? And I think one of the things that we don't understand is that, like, I personally love, for my own pride and sanity, anonymous acts of mercy and generosity. Because, like, the weirdest things always strike. I think of this experience, like, I had with at a baseball game, like, 4 years ago or something. I don't even know how long ago. I barely even remember. Met a young couple with a baby. Wife and I are chatting with them. And this wasn't even really an act of compassion, but more generosity, I guess. I got a foul ball at the game, and I gave the ball to their kid. Right? Had a nice day. Turns out this couple is, like, MB missionaries who saw my picture on the fridge of a friend of ours who are also MB missionaries in Thailand, and, like, were like, you know this guy? And, like, this guy and the dad remembered me. I didn't know my name or anything, but, like, oh, he gave a daughter a ball or whatever. Like, nicest guy ever. Like, he said he'd pray for us. He didn't know we were missionaries. Like, didn't know, I don't even think he knew we were Christians. And I have almost no memory of this, but it's like, I saw the picture of him and I was like, yeah, like that, I remember them. And it's those kind of things, and now I've kind of blown my generosity because I never give balls away. Like, that's the funny thing. If you know me, I do not give baseballs away. If I get a baseball, it's mine. Back off. But I just felt compelled. And it's silly, and it doesn't
matter. Your
wife's
going for the ball, shove her out of the way.
Yeah. No, she never would go for it. She's scared. And I think the idea is, like, I think a lot of this just comes to, like, is it coming from the overflow of our heart?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it something like?
And I love how Jesus reverses it. Like, the lawyer says, is basically asking, who do I have to love and who do I not have to love?
Yeah.
And Jesus says, he doesn't answer. He doesn't define. Well, here's neighbor. It's these guys and not those guys. Instead, the story actually focuses on be the neighbor you would like to be, or like others to be to you.
Yeah.
Instead of going, who is worthy of my love, just be that type of person who does love like that, that would love the way that you want to be loved. So I think in some ways the story focuses less on who's worthy of my love and compassion, rather be a compassionate person.
Yeah.
God will provide the needs. God will provide the neighbors that need love. You be the kind of person that would love.
And I mean, I think a key point is, have eyes to see the needs that exist.
Yeah.
Is that like, and I think that's a point of the priest and the Levite, is that, they cross on the other side of the road. They put the need out of sight. It's one of the ways I've always thought about it, and it may not be true. It may just be whatever they had their things. But there's a out of sight, out of mind, I'm going to ignore it. It's like, don't make eye contact with somebody when you're walking down Robson Street. Right? Like, nope, just don't look at them and they'll leave you alone. But I thought it was a great sermon. I'm looking forward to this week and hearing about prayer and seeing if your new book makes its way into Tim Keller's new book on prayer that Steve's really excited about. That just came out. But
convenient.
That will wrap it up for today. Next week, I got an extra question. So we'll talk a bit about next week. We're going to get to it this week, but we didn't. Something that arose in our podcast last week about the functions of a pastor and elder and how that works. But we'll tackle that next week. If you have questions, please send them to the B-side at TwasonLions.org. We'd love to dig into your questions, and if not, we'll continue to tackle the sermons. But thanks for checking it out, and have a great week.